This podcast is brought to you by Refix, a natural and organic isotonic drink containing 78 sea minerals. It's available on Amazon UK now, and it's heading to the shelves of all major health food retailers and pharmacies soon. Oh, that is nice.
It is nice. It's really good, though, because when I was talking to the guys at Refix, it kind of marries very well with our brand, because not only is it replacing like your normal kind of sugary isotonic drinks with something that's all natural after training, but also for like things like hangovers.
Important, like, for our clients.
Yeah, super important for our clients.
Because a lot of them are hungover.
They love drinking and training.
The flavours are good. That one we've just had now, what is it?
That one's orange and they've got lemon. And then they're bringing out Extreme Hydration, which is mixed with coconut water as well as seawater, because they get the minerals that would normally be added in to a...
Floating around in the sea.
Exactly. They just pull it out of the sea.
78 of them.
It's filtered very, very well.
And it's the Spanish sea as well. So...
The cleanest.
Special sea. And also, they do things to help the planet. They do regular beach cleans. They help tidy up our oceans. It's just a great drink and great people. So we're happy to be partnering with them for this podcast.
Our lovely listeners can buy Refix with a little discount, can't they, George?
They can. It is BTL15. And you type that into the discount code on the Refix website and you get 15% off.
That is BTL15.
Refix. Seawater. Sea hydration. Extra slurps. Is that how you drink all the time?
Super slurpy.
Hey, I'm Dave Hasty.
I'm George Ashwell.
I'm Josh Betteridge.
And I'm Georgia Kennebun. And we are Before the Lights.
We work with actors and teams behind the scenes in film, TV and sport to keep their mental and physical health ticking over on and off screen.
On this podcast, we talk to some of them about how they get the most out of their mind and body and everything in between. In cross-legged there, Josh.
Yeah, well, I'm feeling quite at ease because she's had to go in like Burko's and then...
I've just showered. I'm like cleaning up cocoa butter this fresh.
I'm ready. I'm cocoa buttered and
you
fresh.
You gestured at your crotch when you said cocoa buttered.
Cocoa buttered everything.
Is that where you cocoa
buttered?
You
don't want to see me in that shower.
I've been in afterwards and slipped.
I was wondering who's been gouging the cocoa butter out. Now there's our answer.
Shizard.
This man covered from... head to toe. If this, I was on the walk over here saying to Shazad that 90% of this will be nonsense, and I think that's just proved it.
What are you expecting from this, mate?
I haven't even thought.
We're like Emily Maitlis when we sit down in this room. Just coming at you.
I wanted it to be like a jazz session. You would just flow in.
Yeah.
In this week's episode, we're going a little off-piste. Welcome to the show, Shazad Latif.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
I'd like to say it's Shazad, but I've been allowed to say Shazad because of my northern heritage.
Yes.
And I have lots of northern families, and I allow them to pronounce my name however they
however they fancy.
However it comes out of their mouth. I've had lots of different names growing up, so Shazad's not... That's a good one.
It's cool. A nice one. But for the everyday listener, Shazad.
Shazad. I've had razor blade. That was a weird one.
Wow.
Shittard. My friend's dad used to call me Shittard. So this is not...
Lovingly.
Yeah. He was a lovely guy.
Shittard or just Shittard?
Shittard. Like Wellard.
Yeah, that's quite a good one.
Shiraz and Sinead. And
Sinead.
Teachers used to say Shiraz a lot. It was, and I'm like,
that's so annoying. Make sense.
So Shiraz Lahouf, nice to have you. Thanks for coming on. Once you settled into the name of Shazad Latif, you've gone from strength to strength. You're the star of What's Love Got to Do With It, which if you live in London, populated every bus. Also Star Trek Discovery, Toast of London, and a whole heap of other stuff.
Stuff to come.
Stuff Hopefully. To come. Hopefully. Oh, yeah. Loads of stuff to come. First things first, can you hear me, Clem Fandango?
Yes, I can hear you.
Which, if you've not watched Toast of London, that won't make sense. But I wanted to say it.
I can't hear you. Press the button, you donut. I can't hear you.
It's Clem Fandango. Can you hear me?
Yeah, obviously, if you press the button. What's your problem?
Temper, Stephen.
Don't you temper me, boy. Just do your job.
Okay, Stephen. Now, the client was very, very specific about the style of the read and the pronunciation of some of the words. Clem's got it all in front of him. We'll take it from here.
All right. Hello, Stephen. This is Clem Fandango. Can you hear me?
You are a fucking star, aren't you? Yes!
Okay, so this is important. The client has expressed that he'd really like you to...
Oh, fucking hell. You've done it again, you... Press the button! I can't hear you unless you push the button!
Stephen, this is Clem Fandango. Can you hear me?
I dare you to say that one more time.
But this is the kind of perfect setup for it. This is what...
You would be Jimmy, wouldn't you? Producer Jimmy.
I would, yeah.
If you were being Clem right now. Yeah. Any tips for Jimmy?
Do you want to swap roles?
There are no tips. Clem just exists in his own... just does... what he says.
Was that that must have been a fun character. Forgive me, it's so stupid, isn't it? That little bit of back and forth between the two of them is just...
I auditioned for one line. It was just one line. I went to the audition with my friend Ollie and Jack, and they were waiting outside, and it was down by South Bank. We were literally drinking all day, and it was like, I've just quickly got this one line, I think I'm just going to run it. And it was with Nadira, who's Izzy's mum, she's the best casting director, brought me back in. I was like, what is this? Like, it was so absurd. And I knew it was written by Arthur Matthews, who's wrote Father Ted, so I knew it was... And then I was just like, what is this one line thing? Did it, and then we did it at the read through, and then got the part, and then like I was just like, I don't get this. I don't know why it's funny. Like, and then it just this repeated joke that just kept going, and he changed the name on the day. So on the day, he was like, we're gonna change it to Clem Fandango. And I was like, all right.
Yeah. But how many episodes? You're in a lot of episodes with that basically that one
it's the
line.
Same joke.
It's so good though. Like the more it happens, the better it gets.
Season 3 ended up sleeping with Toast's wife, but that was about Rice of Lido. We were in Rice of Lido.
That's near where I live. It's great. Lovely there.
I was going to say that you were referred to us by friend of the show, Izzy Lachland, but you've kind of hinted at that already when you said it was Izzy's mum who cast you for.
And a big ally for me my whole career. Yeah, she just.
Izzy or Izzy's mum?
Both, actually.
Both.
But you know, Izzy's mum, Nadira, yeah, she's been supporting my career a lot, and she's one of those casting directors that you gather as you go along and sort of help you out. I needed her, yeah.
So thank she you, supported Izzy's your mom. Career, and then Izzy supported your health by introducing you to us.
Yeah.
It's great, that, isn't it?
And I've done nothing for them.
Yeah, right, we need to think about, we need to buy them some flowers.
When you had first come into us, you just finished What's Love Got to Do with It, right?
No, I...
But you...
No, it was... I was starting, I had to prep.
Was it reshoots? I can't really remember.
No, first it was prep, and that was great, and then...
And then you got the other job.
Then I got a job where I looked like David Brent, had a weird goatee and got fat.
What? That was...
That was the policeman.
That was some weird policeman that I was playing, and then I was just drinking like a lot of whiskey, and so then I had to lose it again, because literally in the film, you can see that I changed.
So when you got those two roles, so you'd started training for one...
Yeah, so yeah, it was the reshoots was basically you went off to do Rogue Agent where you didn't need to train because you were a slightly overweight policeman. And then you were like, fuck, I need to get back into the same shape I was in because otherwise I look completely different.
There was the two roles there that we just discussed, but then there was a big chunk of time spent working to get you fit and in shape for your role in Nautilus, which is a Disney Plus show, right?
Disney Plus.
Do you want to give a bit of a spiel of that?
It's Jules Verne, 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, origin story, basically. Now I play Captain Nemo. And it's like, how Indian prince, who wife and child get murdered, and he fights the East India Company, and he's just beating up the English, basically. That's what,
love
and,
it.
Stealing a submarine as well.
And it is, and you, I mean, you said this to me early on, it's like the most written about South Asian character ever or something.
So, you know, it's...
Yeah, and it is this,
I
this
think
guy.
So. I don't know. Captain I don't even remember. I don't even...
Well, you told me that.
Did I tell
so
you?
It's a fact.
I might have made that up, but...
That's fine.
But yeah,
but you'll take it.
Yeah, I'll take that.
One of the most written about.
Yeah, one of his fine. One of fine.
Yeah, you can say whatever you like after that.
Yeah,
one.
No, it's
of.
Great. It's a mad. Yeah, because in the second book you find out his origin is, which is Indian. But in the first book you don't really know he's this mysterious character. But now we can finally have a show where there's an Indian dude, you know,
in the lead,
action stuff and action adventure stuff.
And out of all of the actors in the world, they chose you to do
You're
it.
The one.
Fools.
Yeah,
idiots. They had no idea. That he's going to get fat and look like David Brent, and we have to sort him out all the time.
I'll have to get Wedge for the next one just so they,
just, yeah.
just to just come, they can't say anything.
Turn up too big.
Yeah.
But it sounds like it's a pretty physical role.
The most, we had a crazy shoot, so it was 205 days non-stop.
And you'd gone out to Australia because it was COVID and you guys moved out there.
They have the biggest tank there in the Southern Hemisphere, so that's why they shot it there and for other reasons or whatever. But it was it's a full-on Pirates of the Caribbean. It's just jumping on mechanical whales and you're running around the submarine and there's sword fights and there's guns and muskets and it's physical and so we had to be had to not get injured and be ready.
I want to hear more about that. The biggest tank, water tank.
They did Aquaman there. They did Fool's Gold with McConaughey. It's the biggest tank in the Southern Hemisphere. I think there's one in Belgium.
Do they use that for the underwater stuff? Or is
both,
it for
both.
Above
so
as
you
well?
You can build the blue screen around it.
Got you.
Have the scenes with the sub and different parts or whatever.
Man.
And then also have...
That's actually really interesting to hear about because you watch various films and TV shows where there's a lot of scenes involving water. You don't really think about it that much. I remember when we had Kaya on the podcast and she was talking about how She spent a day chasing a man dressed as a crocodile.
Not a day, like a lot of
the
time.
The crocodile was chasing her. But it was just a bloke in water dressed as a crocodile, and then the rest of it was all CGI.
The crazy is when there's like the divers who are looking after you, the safety guys, but they'll get like someone will come over and on a little float and like give them sandwiches and they're just eating like, snacks because they're in there for they do not leave.
No, they are literally like pruned by the end of it. It's mad. Yeah.
And they're just passing each other tea on the water and I'm like, what?
Did you get a little this is the weirdest a little sandwich in the water or not?
I did.
Nice.
I was one of the fish people. Because I remember being in the tank all day one time. Yeah, underwater scene.
That sounds brutal. Is that like?
Well, that was actually fun because we worked with this guy called Nam who. For a bit of prep, who taught us underwater breathing stuff, and he was he teaches all the surfers how to when they, you know,
how you hold their breath
for more than 2 minutes or whatever. He can hold his breath for like 7 minutes.
That's insane.
So that was really fun stuff, learning how to, because we had to do takes, 1 minute takes, over and over.
How much training does it take to learn how to hold your breath for that long?
Not long. You do like we did like 3 sessions of basic stuff, and it's just like a little thing called a whale breath. And
there's a reflex that everyone has that triggers you to want to breathe, so you start to have these little like muscle spasms. Mm. And I know that that's kind of once you get through that first bit, supposedly, not that I've trained for it, but is that like do you have to kind of learn to not react to that?
Yeah, in the first sesh, we all did like 30 seconds, and then 20 minutes later, we were doing like a minute, and we're like, wait, what? And you have to do it on set while you're moving, obviously, it's harder, but like it's pretty incredible stuff.
That was fun. Did it give you more energy at the end of the day?
I felt good.
Yeah.
When you do little CO2 breathing practices, I love all that stuff.
Did you know that was coming up before you went over there? Because, like, the training that we did, obviously, we're not breathwork experts
or
anything.
Weirdly, there was a miscommunication. They thought I couldn't swim. Somehow I couldn't swim. So I arrived and I'm for this huge part on the water, and they were like, they literally gave me and the stunt guy, like, swimming lessons from when you're like 10, and I was like,
how many lessons in are you before you go like,
I was like, is this just a normal swimming lesson? There, I was like, no, I can swim. And so the director had misunderstood because I said, I've never done any underwater stuff, and he was
like, in general, I've never been under the water,
like, no, but you can't swim. And I was like, what are you guys talking about?
Mad that they cast you in that role,
yeah, they still had you. Yeah, like,
they must have had a real big meeting going, look, he can't swim, but I think we should go for it anyway.
And I was like, no, guys, it's all good, man. I can breaststroke, I can do the
you
basics.
Really nailed that audition, yeah. A lot of this time, when you're doing like a big action thing, it's a big action film, and films are 90-day shoots.
Yeah,
yeah.
Like a 205-day, like 10-episode or whatever episode.
And I mean, you're in. Yeah. It's the lead part, so it's one of those ones.
You're in every day. You're in every scene.
Pretty much every day. Yeah. I had a few, like maybe 15 days off and a half. Like,
yeah, that's wild.
I guess now as well with all the different streaming platforms, these big budget TV shows are like more grand than they were before, and they're kind of becoming. Not replacing films, but it's like a whole new thing, isn't it?
Like, it's like 10 one-hour films.
Yeah,
like with similar budgets. Similar.
Had you done? Were you ready for that?
I'd done Star Trek, so that was also a similar. It was maybe 7-8 months, but I wasn't also the lead in that. And this was a lot of action stuff, a lot of emotional stuff. This was a quite intense job.
Do you find that the physicality of training helps when you're in those situations where you're like, this is just difficult, it's long hours, it's kind of stressful?
100%, yeah.
Do you feel like you've learned something from training that you didn't necessarily think would
think
be?
Not just the physical sense, but yeah, being prepared for the day, the physical aspects, but the mental side, just having that, it does give you energy. And I got used to like, oh, that's why people wake up and do the training before the day. Or so I would have to do like a half an hour session after work every day. I'd try and do something just because it just somehow decompressed you, somehow did it just helped. Otherwise, I would have gone mad. Yeah.
And did you had trainers over there, right?
Had a trainer over there, but again, there just wasn't much time, so it's like quickly 6:30, go and do a quick training session, and then go home and then eat, and then
it's maintenance at that point.
Yeah,
generally in your life, had you been a person that had always tried to kind of, because I know that you've played football growing up and stuff, but had you always tried to kind of make sure you'd done certain amount of exercise or certain type of exercise sort of littered through?
I was always into martial arts from young, so I did like a bit of karate, and then I got into like kung fu when I was 18, and then but I always played football. Weirdly, I'm obsessed with table tennis,
I mean, you like, of for people that come into our gym, you have like
a high skill set of like weird things. Like Josh, our boxing coach, was like, "Yeah, Shahzad's good." and then
we just love sport.
Doing keepy uppies in the gym. Mate, as well. Like, oh shit,
he's just come out of the shower after a mad session with Dave,
covered in cocoa butter. By the way.
Yeah, so greasy.
Wearing Birkenstocks. I'm doing some kick ups with another client. We just kick it to Shahzad, and he just literally bops up, two on the knee, one on the left foot, one on the right foot, just kicks it away and just walks off. We're like out of nowhere.
That's that cocoa butter. Life.
I'd always I'm always just been obsessed with sports and movement and all that stuff. But I reckon when I went to drama school, you get into doing the drink, doing the things, get addicted to stuff, and then that suddenly less. I just got less and less. But then obviously now as an actor, you do need to just be in that space where it just helps with everything.
Yeah, in between, keep physical. Yeah, in whatever way you can.
Did you crowbar that table tennis scene into What Love's Got to Do With It?
Yes, I did. I actually did. This we were rehearsing working title. Lily plays a little bit because she used to play with her brothers, and so she's also very good. And then there was one in the corner of the room, and we were just trying to figure out the scenes, and we were like, "Well, this is not." We were like, "Should we just hit the ball back and forth a bit, just because the scenes are all like that anyway, and that sometimes helps." And I always loved that because Stanley Kubrick used to do that with all his actors, and like it just gives you a little rhythm to the scenes. And then we ended up just doing the whole script with playing table tennis, and the director was like, "This is amazing. let's get it in." So we got that in, and we got a little football scene, and I just always love movies with table tennis in it, because there's an old movie with Jack Nicholson called 5 Easy Pieces, and there's a big table tennis scene in it at the end, and I just, any movie with bowling, table tennis and football, I just like,
it's table tennis on your rider now. Anytime you do anything, you're like, "I need a table tennis table."
I had one at Star Trek.
Am I making it up that you also got your mates in to play football with you?
It was the first day of shooting.
Yeah.
And my best mate, Louis, and one of my mates, Tom Wilmore, they happened to be free. And I was like, "Do you want to be
kick a ball around,
a supporting artist for the day?" Yeah. And I was like, "You get like 100 quid. And they were like, "Yeah, yeah, yeah, 100%. So then my mate Louis just comes and just first day of filming, just he's the guy who fouls me. And the scene is me getting fouled, so I don't even get to play any football. You literally start the scene and he just crunches me. And so we just did that over, and I was like, "Louis, you need to chill, because it's the first day of filming.
Break your leg."
And then my friend Wilmore, I just got like screaming his name in the scene, like talking to Lena. I'm like, Wilmore, like track. And then months later in the edit, like I've got like Jemima Khan like, What's a Wilmore? I'm like, "What are you talking about?" And they thought it was like some knee thing. And like, I was like, "No, it's my friend Tom Wilmore's name."
How good is that? He must love that. Such a feature.
He was waiting for it in the cinema. I think he's seen it. Yeah.
Didn't get cut out. Yeah. Get to the cinema, sitting there waiting.
It's definitely in there. It's definitely in there.
When you had to put on weight and you're like just drinking, eating, having to get in the mindset of the policeman, and then you've done the roles where you've had to work really hard and train and change the shape of your body and all that kind of stuff, which one's more fun?
Now I'm 30, I'm like a bit older now, but like the training stuff's more fun, because I think when you're in your 20s and stuff and you're trying to be like a really cool young actor, you're like, "Yeah, let me just get drunk and do all this stuff," but now it just takes too much of a toll.
Yeah,
I think like everyone that comes in and they think that the putting on weight in any sense, whether it's like having to put
would
on,
be easier.
Would be easier in general until you do it.
After 5 days of eating stuff, it's just too.
When it's like something,
but you love food though, so
I
it must
do
be,
love food.
You are so, like half of our discussions at the gym are about different restaurants that we go to.
It's one of my favorite things when you tell me what you've cooked, because you go into like the detail, and
all I need to do is go
you're telling
to
me about
house.
How you season things. I'm like, "Oh, this is good."
If I just go to my auntie's house for a week, have like curry every day, and just keep drinking,
then it's really
it,
easy.
Then it's easy. And nice. And tasty.
And great,
What would be the number one meal then?
I think the main would be have to be my like a proper Desi, like traditional Arnie's curry from when I was young. That kind of thing. Yeah. Like little coriander sauce, little green mint chutney kind of thing.
Here we go.
The starter might have to be some kind of
here we go.
Like gazpacho thing, you know? That or like a little salmorejo, like, you know, the little.
Have we got that fusion? Has that been done yet as a restaurant?
What, like a
gazpacho, Spanish curries.
I might chuck a banoffee pie at the end, because I like
ooh.
So.
And he's,
this
and
is
he's
a great menu.
English to the core.
Yeah, yeah.
I hadn't even thought, is banoffee pie a particularly English thing?
Is it not?
I mean, it feels
English or American. Maybe.
In my head, Americans.
Yeah, maybe.
Okay.
It's a great invention, though.
I had a really good gazpacho the other day. Yeah, watermelon, tomato.
Yes, where the watermelon seems to be the vibe at the moment.
Is that
a
thing?
It was a bit of chili oil as well, and a bit of feta in there.
Ooh.
Yeah.
I think when people are trying to lose weight and get lean for a role, the food can be slightly restricted.
So instead of the post-workout very shake, you can have a little watermelon. Yeah,
that sounds like it could be a good little, like, oh, you're bored of your breakfast, try this. Josh's watermelon gazpacho.
And it's Shazad in there with me as well.
Who is it? One of my clients said that we should talk to all of our like previous clients that have had to do like quite extreme changes to their body. I think it was Marisa who you did Rogue Agent with.
Yeah.
And she was like, you should get their recipes for like the things they came up with, because everyone's different. And we try and give people, rather than tell people what to eat, we try and go, all right, let's, here's like a cheat sheet.
That's what I did with you. Make a little book out of that.
Yeah, make a little book and like Shazad's three recipes for, yeah.
Getting fat.
Yeah, he's got three for fat, three for thin.
What was Christian Bale's one? He was like, they asked him for the Dick Cheney one. He was just like, I eat a lot of pies.
Yeah, that's it, done.
Fair enough.
Well, it's like, guys, what Denzel Washington for Flight, he was like, I just had like four cheeseburgers every night. And we were like, oh, okay, so you didn't, not even thinking about a healthy way of doing it, just eat food.
Just get it in.
It's hard to do it healthy though, isn't it? Everyone who asks, you can't. It's just milkshakes and sugars.
What was the
Cillian
Murphy most recent one for Oppenheimer? Is like an almond a day for like 5 days of the week, and then he'd eat.
I've not watched it. Is he really small in it?
Super thin in it. I haven't seen it yet.
Almond a day.
Yeah,
an
just
almond.
One.
Moving away slightly from gazpacho.
Nah, let's get. We still on food though.
we're gonna veer away gently. What I was going to talk about, something you sort of touched on. The training provides you kind of like a balance, I guess. Because you were away for ages, you were filming for, like I said, like a whole year, and you come back and then you're spending time with friends and family and going on holiday and that kind of stuff. But you've made coming to the gym like a non-negotiable when you're here. Is that something that you now find is like a real key part of your lifestyle?
Yeah, I think I always wanted to get to that point. When I was younger, I'd be like, I want to get to the point where I'm always going to the gym and being fit. And it's just now I think because I had such a tough year last year, and it was an amazing year, amazing experience, but at the end it took its toll a lot on my mental health, and I had to go and do a lot of soul searching and doing all the things and going into the woods and, you know, finding myself and doing that stuff. And so I think I came back going, well, this is one of those, like you're saying, non-negotiables where I have to just keep everything ticking along the right way, you know.
I think that's the main thing, and the thing we talk about a lot, don't we, that like people see someone that looks a certain way on a screen. What your body is and how it is more like over a period of years rather than like weeks or months, because that is like when you have really found the shape of what you want your kind of lifestyle to be, is when something can naturally ebb and flow.
Yeah.
I think that goes for like a bunch of different stuff, doesn't it?
It's
especially
finding your little things, like, so yeah, I'm into the ice baths, I'm into the breathing, I need to go to the gym today, I need to stretch, and just collecting your little thing and getting rid of the old bad habits.
And they do change as well. You could be into one thing for a long time and then go, actually, now this is my thing, I'm motivated to do this, and that's absolutely fine too. You are the product of the last however many years, and you've adapted to be that thing.
Yeah.
So you're trying to just maintain what you've got and then go, all right, what's the next thing I'd like to be?
My dad, me and him used to just love watching movies together, and he worked as a film reel changer in the cinema. When he was like 15. So he always had good taste in movies, but we watched Legends of the Fall once when I was about, just before, like when I got my first job. So he only ever saw my first job because he passed away a year after. Yeah. But we were watching that, and then we were watching Legends of the Fall, and there's a topless scene with Brad Pitt, and he's like, that's what you got to look like. You've got to look like that. And I'm like, well, one, I'm not white, but also, look at it. I was like, what do you mean look like Brad Pitt? But now I'm like, all right, I'm still trying to get to, like,
yeah, still,
just try, all right, if I can try and look like Brad Pitt in Legends of the Fall, even if it's for a day.
Okay.
Like, so that's, you know,
yeah. Noted.
Like, weird goals of, like, you know, your dead father.
I used to use Brad Pitt as like an example when people were coming in for like one of those transformations that we've done. And like at the beginning, we did a lot of just like purely aesthetic looking good transformations. Now it's a bit more entertaining and we do things that are like more role specific. But I used to be like Brad Pitt and Troy or Brad Pitt and Fight Club.
Yeah,
when
yeah.
Realistically, you're never going to get to either of those. Yeah, so I should stop giving that as a realistic target, because it's not.
Yeah.
Brad's just ruining it for everyone.
Yeah, he's so selfish.
So bloody handsome.
It's nice to have that, like, it's a goal. It's not like a short-term thing, it's just long-term. Keep your bandwidth in a good place. And
yeah, and I don't want to get like obsessed with goals. I like to have goals, but then not get obsessed with them.
You don't want too many pictures of Brad
thing in the, like,
it's just there.
Yeah, picture. I've got a secret
bedroom covered in photos.
It's just his
him.
IMDb pages. And I'm just like,
it's like a weird school locker in his room that's just full of pictures of Brad.
Don't come in.
We've got some questions from Georgia.
We haven't acknowledged that she's not here.
No, Georgia's not here today.
She couldn't be here, sadly.
Haven't heard her today.
She has written, please read in an Australian accent, which I don't know if I'm willing to make myself sound like such an idiot.
You should try.
I'll try. Shall I try?
Let's see if you go Queensland.
Well, first of all, I'm holding it upside down, so it'd help a lot.
Well, if you go,
that's because you're in Australia.
upside down. Right, I'll try the Aussie accent. This is going to be ridiculous. As soon as I'd gone to try and do it, I'm like, my mouth just went. What's the biggest thing you've learned from fitness?
Kiwi, mate.
That was a little bit kiwi, but, kiwi, but right. I think we should wait for the answer though before we
sorry. Try and make me feel more comfortable. Not
biggest thing I've learned from fitness, just how the mind and body are linked. That it's not just you going to gym to work out. It's just that it benefits everything mentally, you know, spiritually, everything. It's like to keep reminding yourself of that
mind, body, spirit.
Yeah, beautiful answer. This next one makes me think that she can predict the future because she isn't here, but she's written. And I don't know why I'm going to try to do an Aussie accent again. How long can you hold your breath for?
Weird.
That is weird. How does she know?
No idea.
Also makes for terrible podcast content if it's just you holding your breath.
This is not underwater. This is just holding your breath.
Should we time it? And everyone just has to listen.
Should we all have a go?
I reckon, no. When I was doing lots of the Wim Hof stuff, like every day consistently, I think I got up to about 240, something like that. But now...
That's impressive.
But now I reckon I have to do that.
She didn't say when. So at some point in your life.
My life, I reckon
that's
I've got
great.
To.
40 is a long time.
The final of the three questions. I may as well carry on with the Australian accent, I suppose. How did you find your spiritual side?
South African that time.
That's an interesting question. I was brought up, going to the mosque with my dad, Regent's Park Mosque, Muslim with my dad, and then they separated, and then I was with my mom. So I don't know, there was always an element of that spirituality in that religion anyway. Maybe it's from a movie. I just watch loads of, I don't know, like things you take from a movie. And then there's a whole, I just always got interested in it, started reading a lot.
It's just always what you resonate with, right?
Yeah, there's always that connection to nature and stuff like that, and magic mushrooms. And no, but like, when you go on those soul-searching things, I don't know.
Do you find there's things from having an interest in the spiritual side of things that you kind of use or like have a practice for when you're on set? Because there's a lot of time, maybe not in Nautilus job, but there's usually a lot of time where you've got time to yourself, you're in a trailer, there's time to kind of mull over your thoughts and that kind of stuff.
It's probably Bruce Lee actually that probably got me into my spiritual stuff early. That Eastern philosophy stuff when I was young, all the martial arts. That was probably where that all began.
And so it started because you wanted to be as hard as Bruce Lee, and then you're like, he's spiritual, so
you've got to do the philosophy.
You got through that part of it, actually.
But no, yeah, that's actually, acting is one of those things, because there's, you know, you can look at acting in that way as well. It can be a very just simple David Mamet kind of just say the line thing, or it can be a very spiritual practice as well. And it's, yeah, being on set and these 12 hours in a studio, and you have to have some kind of mental way to focus. And I like energy exchange anyway. There's an energy thing with the people there, you're the magic between cut and action. And
do you find that there's like a version of you when you haven't started a scene, and then there's another version of you when you're acting?
Depends what the scene is, I suppose, or depends what, whatever the mood requires in that time, I suppose you have to sort of get in that headspace. But there is an intense, it's weird, it's like you've got to be incredibly relaxed but an intense focus at the same time. So it's like that optimum, zen optimum sporting moment. I suppose Djokovic talks about that.
Yeah.
Trying to get that point where both are like,
I think that's why there's
uber
like
relaxed but uber focused at the same time,
which is why I love table tennis, because that's where the brain gets that no thought space. Yes. And like,
but there are a lot of parallels between like the sporting performance and kind of on screen acting performance, and I think that's kind of like how we've ended up doing what we're doing, because our background is a lot more from sport, really. We never had the intention of hanging
out. Definitely not as hard as like sport or anything. I also feel like silly to me so seriously,
Jack
Grealish couldn't act.
Yeah, exactly. Like you're,
I'd love to see a Jack Grealish.
I want to see that Gucci advert.
I think it's coming along in the future at some point. That guy seems to just be like in everything.
There is that kind of like method of it, like you were talking about, like connection to acting, where there's like a bunch of actors that you think like they are like the Jack Grealishes of acting, where it's just like so visceral, they can't help it. It's like when he plays football, he can't help it, he's just good. It's like there are a bunch of actors that don't have to put any thought into it. It's just like it's on the surface. And maybe he would be great.
I think he could do
good calves for it as well.
Didn't he's got great calves. What is that calf worth? What is he doing?
Running and playing football every day.
Nah, I think you're either born with big legs or you're not. That's a man with little twiggy legs.
It's a special workout, man.
My favourite part of the show, the embarrassing stories.
Okay.
Which you were thoroughly underprepared for, because you haven't actually listened to the podcast. And we haven't told you today. So I will give you...
There's a lot of thought there. I can see it.
Yeah,
now.
I think I'm trying.
I'll give you an option.
Yeah.
You could tell the story you told me at the gym quite recently. I watched a film that you were in.
Yeah.
With Liam Neeson.
Yes.
Are you about to tell him it's embarrassing for him?
No, no, he's great in it, and surprisingly great in it, because he told me what was actually happening on set big scene. But what was the film called again? I watched it recently.
This was The Commuter.
The Commuter. Mm-hmm. Great film.
Liam Neeson on a train.
Liam Neeson. It's taken on a train, basically.
And lots of great actors, actually, in that movie, yeah. You've got Kingsley Benadire, Florence Pugh, Letitia Wright was in it. Everyone was in there.
Everyone was in that film.
I need to watch that.
Damson's in it
That was probably, 5 years or 6 years ago now? Something like that.
It was,
what happened?
It was a who's who of, young British actors.
Yeah. Don't ruin it. I haven't seen either.
But no, you don't have to give the film away. Yeah. But there's a particular scene that you were telling me about.
So in that movie, I have one main scene with Liam. Like, everyone gets their little, all the young actors get their one scene with Liam on the train. He sort of interrogates him. And then, that was the big scene I was waiting for, because the rest of the time we're just sort of chilling on the train.
You were literally just commuting.
But we're all at Pinewood there for, a good month. And it was just, so the big scene with Liam's coming up. The night before, I took my niece to a restaurant in Kentish Town, and must have just had some bad chicken. And so then that night, I'm literally start projectile vomiting, to sleep.
Oh dear.
And then I'm like, okay, that's fine. I've got rid of it or whatever. Drive to Pinewood, an hour drive or whatever. And I'm starting to feel, and this is, this day is like, we're literally supposed to film at 10 a.m.
Driving.
Is this your biggest scene of the whole shoot?
It's the biggest scene of the whole shoot. This is and it's Liam Neeson. And I want to show up. And then literally I get to the trailer, walk into the trailer that she takes me. I'm like, yeah, thanks. Shut the door and projectile into the toilet. And then I'm just like, there's no way I'm going to be able to, I'm just going to be, and it's just one of them ones where it just keeps coming.
Yeah.
So I just told him, and so they managed to move the scene to 4 p.m. that day. And I just was vomiting for about 4 hours. By the time then, I'm like, yeah, I'm ready. Putting the suit on, getting ready. And I get there, and he's just so lovely, and he's like, are you feeling all right? Are you right? And I'm like, yeah, I'm good. And then, do the scene. But he was just so, so amazing. But it was just, the worst day.
And you're wanting it to be like this. Yeah, yeah. You're like, this is an important thing in my life.
Yeah. You're just there, just sat in your sofa in your trailer, just, waiting for the next round of
horrific.
Sick.
It was I'm never going out late again. I just want to be fresh before filming that all the time now. Just
never eating chicken ever again.
The best
never
thing is, you just went out with your niece to chill. And now it's you weren't even on a big rager.
I've just got trauma. I'd never see my niece again. I can never again.
It's all your fault.
Never see Liam Neeson again.
Have you got, is there another one? I know that George queued that one up for you. Not to put you on the spot.
An embarrassing story. You mean audition story? Or is it?
Could be anything. We've had audition stories. We've had training in the gym stories. We've had on set stories. We've had all sorts.
I got two audition stories. One's quite weird, and then one's weird. It's not. It's one's sad, weird, but but one's.
Do the funny.
The funny one's not funny. This is just.
I want sad weird.
This one's quick. This was an audition came through, and you normally get an email, and it said it was for Shahzad Latif, the character name.
What?
And I was like, what do you mean? And so I was is the character called, it was Shaheen Bey, and it was for some cop drama or something years ago. The character's called Shahzad Latif, and I was like, this doesn't make any sense. Anyway, I was arrogantly well, obviously I'll get it. Went in, did the audition. Didn't get my own name. And I was like, but what is it? Where did the writer get the name from? That doesn't even make sense.
Yeah.
So I didn't get.
So they basically wrote you a part and you weren't good enough.
I weren't good enough.
The other one,
this is actually a mad story. This is just a weird audition.
We love weird auditions. A couple of our favourite stories have been weird auditions.
Quite personal, quite sad, but I think I'll tell you guys because I love you guys.
And to everyone else that listens to this podcast.
So I had it was literally, actually, it's the anniversary of my dad's death tomorrow. I know I'm keep talking about my dad's death, but he'd passed away, but I had an audition for Danny Boyle the next day.
Oh, shit, what film?
It was Hypnosis One, the one with McAvoy and Rosario Dawson, yes. I think. The night before, we have a horrific night, and then I have to go down to the funeral the next day. But my mum was like, go to the audition, just come on the train after, because we'd been building up to this, and it was just one of those crazy moments. Mm. It was she was like, go to it and just come meet me at the train station. So I go to the audition, just finding out just the information that just passed. And then Gail Stevens, I think it's Danny Boyle's casting director, she was like, the thing is, you're hypnotizing the scene. And so the scene is you've got to imagine the worst thing possible. So Danny's there and he's like, just imagine the worst thing possible. But you can't move, but your eyes are
eyes open. Have got to tell it.
And your eyes have got to tell it. And so then we do this audition and I'm just like, and then afterwards I just go to Gail, I was like, Gail, my dad's just passed away. I need to go. And I'm like, and she's like, what?
Is he still in character?
I was just what? How did that even
Yeah.
It was just the weirdest thing. It's just a coincidence. I just still remember doing it. I was like, this is this.
It's almost, it was easier for you, if anything.
Yeah.
That so, was
did you get it?
You know, I don't think I got it. Oh, why I think I don't why, know. I'm sure Danny's got his own reaction. But I think I couldn't drive at the time. And then I was like, no, I'll get my license in like a week. Oh, and I was like, then I was like, they were like, shut up. It doesn't matter.
I
couldn't drive for ages. So that's my advice to younger guys, is get the driving license straight away.
That is one thing on that, on that CV of things where you can't really, like, you can't blag that. You can say you've ridden horses, and if they put you on one, you could be able to try and blag it, but you literally don't have a driving license. You're not going to be able to drive.
I thought they just put you on one of those things, and it's like, fake.
There's a lot of films, though, where it's like driving license is required.
I did that Rogue Agent film with Gemma Arterton and Marisa and Edwina Finley. There's three amazing actors in the car with me, and we're doing a manual car, and it's a car from like 1991. They're like, do a hill start, and I'm like, guys, I'd asked them for like a month, give me an automatic, please. Like, we can trick it. Just don't do this. And like, literally by the end, the grips had to like push the car. They're laughing at me. Like, I'm just looking like David Brent. Like, just it's the worst. Another terrible day. It was the funniest
that's
day.
There's nothing worse than like story too. Anything where it's like, you know, right, I've got to do this. And then there's more pressure. Then there's more pressure.
I just don't want to drive manual cars. I just can't. It's just like horrific.
This is
like,
one
you're
thing.
Under pressure, like trying to get on the hill. Like,
unnecessary. Nobody needs to be driving them. What's coming up? We kind of know what's coming up. Yep. But as a little recap at the end of the episode.
Yeah, we got, I've got a film called Magpie coming out with Daisy Ridley and my friend Tom Bateman.
Mm-hmm.
And they worked on that together, and he wrote it, and it was from...
That was another one you were doing in between preparing for Nautilus.
And that was a small piece about a couple and their actor daughter, and he chaperones her to work, and just the stuff that goes on there.
When's that coming out?
That should be, I'm not sure with all the
strikes. We'll keep our eyes peeled for it though. Lots of things to look forward to.
Yeah,
well, I'd like to, from the bottom of our hearts, thank you very much.
Thank you. That is the most sincere he's ever
that's
been.
Nice and heartfelt. Really,
this is how I'd normally do it.
Really,
thanks for coming
it.
On.
Cheers.
You brought some
spirituality.
Oh, nice way to finish.
Some
that.
Spirulina.
Spirituality.
What the fuck?
It's a tough one.
Spirituality.
It's not a tough one.
It's just a word.
it's just quite a simple word. Thank you for
bringing
your spiritual energy.
See you later.
Thank you, Shazad.
Thank you.
Woo.